Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
My brand new book, Midwife Pip's Guide to a Positive Birth, is now available. So much more than a book, this is a guide that allows me to hold your hand through your birth preparation journey. With over a decade of experience and knowledge packed in to ensure you really are empowered in the way you deserve to achieve a positive birth, regardless of the twists and turns that crop up. Make sure that you get your hands on Midwife Pip's Guide to a Positive Birth book now and are empowered to have the birth experience that you deserve. Hello, I'm Pip and welcome to the Midwife Pip podcast. This week, I am joined by a woman on a mission to improve the life of other women. Claire Bourne, on Instagram as Claire Bourne Physio, is a specialist pelvic health physiotherapist and author of her new book, Strong Foundations. Claire is doing incredible work through her book, social media page, and clinics to raise the lid on pelvic health issues and break down the barriers to accessing help so that we can all run, jump, and dance with confidence and free from symptoms. So welcome, Claire. Welcome back, because you came on the podcast right at the beginning. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Yeah, it's lovely to be back. You've had, I feel like, so many series now covering so many amazing topics, which is brilliant.
We're in like 130 something episodes now, which feels
insane.
Wow, okay. But it's great to get you back talking about pelvic floor again, because we know that it's something we really need to talk about more.
Really need to. Yes, absolutely. I feel like it's all that's talked about, but obviously in anyone's echo chamber, that is all you hear about. And yet I still meet, and I know you will still meet, so many women who are just like, why is no one telling us this? And I'm like, we're really trying. But which I've also seen really positively, I'd say in the last year or two, is more women coming through pregnancy just saying, you know what, I don't have any problems at the minute, but I'd really like to keep it that way. And actually, I want to understand what I'm doing, because I've been told I should do this and I just don't know what I'm meant to be doing. And I'm like, that's amazing, because, you know, so many of us might invest in a PT who's prenatal trained, or invest in all these magical things that are going to make our baby sleep. And yet we forget that actually, if we invest a little bit, and often women come to me once, I'm not asking them to come 10 times in pregnancy. Come once, and actually they're like, wow, I actually get what I'm meant to do, how I'm meant to prepare for birth. And yeah, I think we're in a really exciting time of women saying enough, like I want to look after me and I want to know what to do.
Yeah, and you know what, we deserve better. Like we deserve to invest that in our bodies, because the changes they do in pregnancy are incredible. So
amazing.
We deserve it, and therefore we need more people like you writing books, which is so overdue, Claire. My goodness, we need this in our lives.
I know, we need
and
more.
And speaking about pelvic health. And you've been on a whirlwind, haven't you, recently? Because you have been navigating life, putting your words of wisdom down onto paper for us. How are you? Are you a little bit exhausted by everything?
I mean, that really, I feel like, you know, when you plan your wedding and you're in that kind of like slight high of like, this is so much, this is so exhausting, but also like I wouldn't change it for the world. A bit like early motherhood, I think, as well. So yes, I'm doing well, but yeah, it's, you know, writing a book, it sounds as big as it is. And though I've thoroughly enjoyed the process, like I really have enjoyed writing, and I've enjoyed the time and the ability, I guess, at this point in my career to really just consolidate everything that I love sharing. And I guess bring a bit more in depth what I try to do on social media into one place. Because I think sometimes, and I'm sure you feel like this on social media, you open a topic and you're like, I can share about this much information, like a few hundred words. And you're like, but that's literally like a drop in the ocean of what really needs to be said. And so I really enjoyed that ability, I guess, to make cross links between everything that I talk about, rather than it being like one day I talk about this, one day I talk about this, one day I talk about this. So I guess a bit like how podcasts are, you know, you get to go in depth and explore. And I think what it's allowed me to do is do that. And it's been, yeah, really enjoyable. And I've been amazed at the response. You know, I think there is a real hunger from women for more information, whether, you know, with the menopause conversation exploding as well. And as scary as it is, you know, I'm hitting my mid 30s. Well, I am not hitting, I've hit them. I'm full on hit them. I can't say I'm hitting them, I'm there. And, you know, there's an element of, you know, I'm moving past the baby days and the next phase for me will be, you know, looking towards perimenopause. And I think that those gaps for a lot of women are getting smaller from when we have babies to when actually we're hitting the perimenopause. And so I guess what I really want to open up that conversation is less looking at our lives as periods and actually looking at it as a continuum of actually we're the same person throughout all these seasons. The things we do now are going to be the same things we're going to need to do then. The better we get into habits, rather than being like, well, I'll just deal with that when I'm at that point. Really basic stuff that we can be doing now
to help us in that longer term. And actually, totally. I think when we think about pelvic health, it makes perfect sense that putting it in one place in one book is beneficial to us as readers, because we know how interconnected your every aspect of that yes. anatomy and physiology is. So like totally. You say, when you're doing a snapshot here and a snapshot here, which is all we can do on social media, we don't give that whole comprehensive picture that you desperately want to get across to people to make it kind of click and connect and make it functionable. So
100%. Amazing. I think the other thing that I've noticed as well is that so many people are like, oh, it's a book about pelvic floor exercises. And I'm like, I honestly couldn't write 350 pages on pelvic floor exercises. Like, even me, who can go on and on about them. And this is where the conversation needs to shift, because pelvic health is so much more than just the pelvic floor muscles. And yet, I think because our education is so basic and so just focused on the perinatal period, that's what it becomes. And that becomes our whole understanding. A bit like, you know, I'm sure you find with birth, for example, like everyone's focused on the birth in that one moment, but what comes before it and what, you know, is also hugely influential of what happens in the moment of birth. So it's a bit like that, though we focus on one period of life, what comes before and what goes after, also completely connected. I think in healthcare, though, and we can both say this as healthcare professionals, we love to box and we love to isolate, right? Because it means that we get really good at something. And I think the difference with pelvic health, you know, and I think this is where women struggle a lot of the time is, you know, if you've got a problem with your vagina or womb, you go to the gynecologist. If you've got a problem with your bladder that might also be related to the vagina, you go to the urogynecologist. If it's just your bladder, it's your urologist. If it's your bowel, it's the colorectal surgeon. And yet probably a woman also is struggling with constipation and prolapse symptoms and some urinary leakage. And yet you can't find one person who does all of those things. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where pelvic health physiotherapists can sometimes come in and be that overarching bird's eye view that can give women that, okay, well, let's look at the whole of you rather than just one of your organs. And I think that's the slight difference that we're starting to move. It's been there for a long time, but I think the conversation is becoming more mainstream.
And people are becoming more aware of it. And there's exactly. a lot of work to do still, but we're making baby steps.
We're getting there. Yeah.
So, Claire, I put a question box out on social media because I knew this would be a hot topic that people would have loads of specific questions on, essentially. So I'm going to throw some at you. Is that okay?
Hit me. I love it.
So first one is it safe to do pelvic floor exercises when you're pregnant?
Yes, very much so. Like, we'll always have to red flag it in the sense of say, you know, if you have any complications with your cervix or you've had any concerns about the baby, sometimes women are told bed rest, no pelvic floor exercises, in a very rare occurrence. But for the average woman, for the majority of women, absolutely yes, they are safe to do, and we actively encourage it. The strong research we have shows that pelvic floor exercises are very preventative. If we do it, we're preventing problems. And again, I'd say in our healthcare system, we're not the most preventative. We're really good when there's a problem. We're very good at being reactive, but we haven't quite got all that education in to be proactive. And that's the slight difference. So yes, if you're pregnant, we strongly encourage that you're doing them from as early on as possible.
Yeah. Amazing. Thank you. So if you're pregnant, please be doing a pelvic floor exercises.
Give it a go.
How often should you do them?
Yeah, so this is a great question. It sort of depends what phase of life you're in and what we're trying to achieve. So in essence, when we're treating incontinence or prolapse, the general encouragement is aiming sort of for 10 of each type, and we'll talk through different types in a minute, but aiming for sort of 3 times a day. The guidelines sort of state there should be like a minimum of 8 sort of reps a day that we should be working on. So we don't really know is the honest answer. We have different studies that say different things. Where I come at it from is I'm like, to be honest with you, all of that is irrelevant if it doesn't work for you and for your life. And I think sometimes when we say to people, or do this something 3 times a day or do this every day, they're like, I just can't fit that in right now. And so they don't do anything. Yeah. So I always say to women is start where you're at. You can scale up, but I'd rather you say, I'm going to commit to doing this 3 times a week around, you know, maybe I'm doing some other form of exercise. And in those sessions, I'm also going to do some helpful exercises. Get that consistent and then think, you know what, I'm actually finding this easy now because I know what I'm doing. I'll do some every day. Okay, then I might do them 2x a day. But there's no point of going in there all guns blazing, trying 3 times a day when actually you're so busy and juggling a lot of other things. So that's generally where I come at it, because I think we're actually setting up women a lot of the time to fail because we're giving them unrealistic goals. And that's not going to get anyone anywhere.
And that's so relatable, isn't it, to other forms of exercise in life? Like if you saw your personal trainer or your coach and they said, you know, you need to exercise for 1 hour 6 times a week and you're a new mum or you're heavily pregnant and you're juggling work, like you're not going to do it, are you? And then you feel like you're failing. So it's the same, I suppose, in managing those self-expectations and actually working.
100%. I put a cycle in the book which talks about this completely, where I'm like, basically like, set unachievable goal, can't reach unachievable goal, disengage because you feel like a failure, and then the symptoms remain. So then you end up stuck in this cycle of just feeling like a failure, but also not getting any better. And I'm like, the way to cut out of that is to start setting realistic goals. So, you know, what I say to women, they're like, what should I be doing? And I'm like, well, what can you commit to? Because that's what you should be doing. Yeah. I can tell you the research until we're blue in the face, but research is irrelevant if it's not possible for you. Yeah. And that's where I think sometimes it's really difficult to marry research with reality. And then I think we can have goals, but we have to start bite-sized. And I think starting in pregnancy is a nice time to do that, because realistically, if you can get a bit more consistency in pregnancy, when motherhood kicks in and you're juggling even more, you will have that baseline sort of practice.
And also, Claire, the women that I see postnatally, when they have been doing powerful exercises in pregnancy, especially if they've been assessed and really have that confidence that they're doing them correctly, and we'll talk about that in my next question leads into that, those women find it so much easier to reconnect with their pelvic floor postnatally because they know what it should feel like. So when everything's a bit numb and injured and swollen and bruised, actually they know when they are getting it, and it makes the whole process from a rehab perspective, I think, so much smoother.
100%. I mean, there's nothing more demoralizing than trying something and having no clue what you're doing and feeling like you're not getting anywhere, which I think is where pelvic floor exercises come unstuck for a lot of people. They're like, well, it's not working. I'm like, yeah, but why is it not working? Because in essence, is it just because we haven't taught you the right way? Is it because you're not thinking about all the right things? Is it because it's too one-dimensional? What's the reason? There must be a reason. Not that it always works for everyone, like that's not true either, but there's a lot of women that I do then see and they're like, oh, if I only had known that a year ago, it would have been really helpful. So
Our pelvic floor's hard, isn't it? Because if someone says exercise your bicep muscle, we can see that muscle contracting and relaxing, and we can't with our pelvic floor. And that leads into the next question, which I think is if there could be one reason to see a specialist in pregnancy or postnatally, for me, this would be the one. And that's, how do I know if I'm doing my pelvic floor exercises correctly? I'm just taking a mini pause to share some important information about your emotions after giving birth. With 9 months of anticipation, the stresses of labor, the joy of meeting your new baby, and the realization that you're now a mum, and a major hormonal change that happens, the first few days after birth can be hugely emotional. It's important to be kind to yourself and to grant yourself compassion during this time. For more information on your mind and body post-birth, check out apticlub.co.uk.
Yeah, it's really hard. There are things that you can do at home. So really basic things, you can get a mirror and have a look at your vulva. And what you should see when you squeeze your pelvic floor is essentially your vagina closing ever so slightly, or the perineum, which is that area between the vaginal opening and your anus, slightly drawing in to the body. That's a very visual feedback of, oh yes, it's squeezing, and I can also then see it releasing. And releasing is really key. So it's really important that you can see both dimensions. You can put your own finger to give a bit of like feedback. So you can put that on the perineum or just inside the vagina and see if you can squeeze around your finger and release. So those are two very kind of visual or tactile ways that you can get feedback. There are loads of devices out there as well that you can use to pop inside the vagina and they feed back. So there's lots of like products out there, different brands. One that's quite good in pregnancy, which also then doubles up as a like a stretching device for birth, is called the Epino. So you can, it's like a balloon that you can put in. So there's no electronics involved, which is what sometimes women prefer in pregnancy. Pop it in the vagina. It's a little balloon. You have a dial, and as you squeeze around, you see the dial go up and it come back down. So there's lovely visual feedback ways. But as you say, like you can look in a mirror, you see your bicep curl, job done. Your brain sees nicely, oh yes, I'm doing the right thing. That's what makes it so hard, because the body relies on feedback in different forms, visual, touch, you know, where we are in space. So we need all of those feedbacks, and you just don't get that from the pelvic floor. But yes, an examination by a professional who can examine your pelvic floor and say, look, that's a squeeze. Sometimes women are like, oh, is that what I meant to be feeling?
Yeah. Or often I hear, oh, that's all it is. Because sometimes you're expecting this massive movement. You're like, no, it's totally small, it's small.
I know, it's much smaller. And often when you look, the thing is, we don't even know where the pelvic floor muscles are half the time, and we don't know what they even look like. So when you don't even know those things, it's really hard to then be like, you know, visualizing what we can't even visualize it, let alone see it. So basic education is vital. You know, we've got to stop just saying to women, are you doing your pelvic floor exercises? And they're like, sure, I'm squeezing something somewhere. Yeah. So hoping for the best. It's just too basic.
It is too basic. And just, can I jump in with a question? This is a question
always.
Now, adding one in. So devices are something that I'm always a little bit cautious of, because I've seen women that are using, you know, various different devices.
Yeah.
Like, I know I'm doing a good pelvic floor exercise because the device tells me I am. But actually, when we do an assessment, they're doing like a great exercise with their abdominals and their leg muscles, which the device isn't quite sensitive enough to recognize. Isn't coming from the pelvic floor. So yes, you're generating some pressure, but from a completely different place.
Not from the right place. Yeah, absolutely. So I think devices is a huge topic, and there are two main, which is something I need to film, because I've had so many questions on this recently. Two device types. So you've got stimulatory devices and biofeedback devices. So stimulatory devices are where a probe goes inside the vagina and stimulates the pelvic floor. It's a bit like, you know, when you hear those like ab stimulators where you stick on those things onto your abs, right? Basically,
and then the
like
next
that.
Day you've got a six pack.
I know. Maybe I should try it one day.
You might be disappointed, I think.
Like, yeah, exactly. I'll leave that alone. But it's basically that idea where we're stimulating the muscles to, over time, build their strength. A biofeedback device, there's no internal stimulation. It's just picking up. And I think that's more what you're talking about. Some devices are much more honed towards picking up the actual accurate pelvic floor movement. So some devices have been designed with physios that have looked at the research to assess the right type of movement of the pelvic floor rather than just picking up pressure. Ultimately, we don't have concrete studies that look at all these individual devices. We have things that we do have research that looks at stimulatory and biofeedback devices as general. And the guidelines in the UK state that they shouldn't be used as a routine thing. They should be used on a case-by-case basis. So yes, there are some women that I assess and we can't get any pelvic floor activation. Then we might use a stimulatory device. And they find that really helpful. And amazingly, a month or so later, they're suddenly like, yeah, I can do it myself. Wonderful. Great. There's a complete place for that in our practice. Some women are like, listen, Claire, I want to do this, but I ain't going to do it. So I need something that's going to make me do it. I'm going to put it in. I commit to it like a PT and I'm going to make it happen.
It keeps you accountable then, doesn't it?
Exactly. whatever works is my opinion. So I always just say, I sit in the gray if it works for you and you want to try it. But what I don't want women to do is, so they've got to fork out hundreds of pounds for something when actually they could have probably paid less for one assessment and actually potentially learned a bit more about their body. So for me, it's a balance. There's a place for everything. I'm not against these things. I think they have a place, but it's just about finding the right thing for that individual, which will be different.
Yeah, such a good point. Because like you say, there is no one size fits all in women's health generally, is there?
Not at all. As much as we'd like it to be.
Yeah, definitely. If only. Awesome. Okie doke. How do I know if my pelvic floor is okay or not?
This podcast is sponsored by Pregnacare from Vita Biotics. We all know how important it is to support our health when trying for a baby, during pregnancy, and in the postpartum. Pregnacare vitamin and mineral supplements provide advanced nutritional support for every stage of pregnancy, before, during, and after. They include vitamin D and the exact levels of folic acid as recommended by the UK Department of Health. Pregnacare, expert nutritional care for pregnancy, with you every step of the way. To find out more, visit www.pregnacare.com.
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, in essence, if you're not symptomatic of what we would call pelvic floor dysfunction, it's probably doing pretty well. So, but that again is, I guess, simplified answer as well. So most common symptoms of pelvic floor dysfunction are incontinence, though I always find that difficult to say as well, because incontinence isn't just necessarily to do with the pelvic floor muscles. There is obviously other things, because I think that makes it too simple and said, oh, just do your pelvic floor exercises and it will go away, because it doesn't always. And so it's a bit more complex than that. But simplistically, urinary incontinence, fecal incontinence, pelvic organ prolapse. So if you're experiencing sort of heaviness in the vagina, again, it's not just about the pelvic floor, it's about the connective tissues as well. But these are under the umbrella term of pelvic floor dysfunction. These are things that we don't want to ignore. That's indicating there is some struggle going on in that department. The other thing, though, that I think is really important to talk about is other symptoms that we may not associate so clearly with the pelvic floor, things like pain with intercourse or pain with using a tampon, where actually we are, though often focused on this idea of pelvic floor being far too weak, you've had a baby, everything's far too weak. Actually, we can have muscles that are too high tone. So tone being the term that refers to kind of how the tension in a muscle at any point. So we will have resting tone, you know, our muscles, they have a nice resting tone, they activate, they release, you know, that's kind of within the normal. What can happen in some reasons, for some women, for various different reasons, and men, and those of all genders, is that you can end up in this high tone. So actually almost what women feel like, everything is far too tight and I just can't let go. And that can then lead to symptoms such as I've mentioned, like pain with intercourse. So it's any of those things, your pelvic floor might not be completely happy. Equally saying that, you know, I examine women who come, as I say, in pregnancy, they're like, there's nothing wrong with me, but I want to know more. And actually their function is still not optimal. So though they're not symptomatic at that point, would they potentially be more at risk because they actually don't have optimal function? Hard to say. I don't have a research study on that. Maybe we will one day. I don't know. But I just think anytime you can optimize, nothing has to be perfect. That is for sure. Mm. You know, but as you know, within your exercise realm, how we do things and how we function, how we move are important. And I definitely see within supporting women to prepare for birth, and there's more work going on around this, which is really exciting, is actually if you don't really know what it means to let your pelvic floor release and relax, and actually fear then kicks in and actually you're holding your pelvic floor more, could that in some way make the birth process arguably slightly harder? Again, we don't know. But I think the more we can empower women of what it is to be connected to your body, to release and let go and not be in a fearful state, is really key.
Yeah, it is. And prevention's better than cure, isn't it? Like, it's just
got 100%.
Yeah. It comes down to us recognizing that actually we should be empowered to understand our own bodies and kind of what's going on. And if I think back to my own pregnancy, I was one of those people that were like, everything feels fine, But I knew I wanted to keep running. That was my sport. I wanted to keep running in pregnancy, but I was really conscious that what I didn't want to do is any kind of potential damage long term if perhaps my pelvic floor did have any kind of issue. So I actually had an assessment, and that then gave me the confidence to continue doing an exercise that I loved through my pregnancy. Although everything was fine, it actually really changed my the journey of my pregnancy, whereas before, even if it was psychological, I probably would have stopped because I felt a bit of something or I was anxious about something. So it can be a real game changer, even if, you know, you don't find any complication. Actually, it can give you that reassurance as well.
That's it. It's just that empowerment in your body. You can't put like money on that. It's just something that's very basic that we should all be entitled to. But sadly, it's just not there yet.
And actually quite an easy fix.
Yeah, definitely.
It's not complicated in terms of fixing for women that have got, you know, a little bit of suboptimal function of the pelvic floor. It's not really hard for them to implement at that stage. It's the best time to catch it.
Totally.
Hopefully we've sold pelvic floor exercises to everybody.
Is everyone convinced?
Yeah, I know. I mean, I've definitely been doing them during this chat. I don't
know. Yeah, well, I know. I think my face has that impact on people.
Claire's here. I must start squeezing my pelvic
floor. Yeah, I know.
This, I think, is a really interesting one. Will pelvic floor exercises help my vagina feel normal again post-birth?
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
They will help. I think there's so many things that can help our vagina feel normal. So I guess let's go with three key things. So after a vagina delivery, there is a big stretch. Now, some of the research studies suggest that there is like a 2.5% stretch of some of the muscles. Now that is huge, right? Huge amount of stretch of the muscles. So there is an element of, if you did that to any other muscle, they need a bit of recovery time. So yes, arguably from that perspective, gently engaging the muscle, building up the strength, building up the tone, really good. The other element is if you have any tearing. So obviously that's going to make the vagina more sensitive, more uncomfortable. It needs to heal. Now, pelvic floor exercises aren't going to change that scar tissue, but what they can do in the short term is help pump blood and lymph around the area, help with swelling management. Now, we don't want to be hammering 60 a day, but gentle activation can be good for that reason. The other thing going on is hormonal changes. So that drop in estrogen that occurs, the often drier vaginal tissues and vulval tissues. Now, pelvic floor exercises, again, are not going to change that, but they can, again, improve blood flow to the area, which can be helpful with kind of lubrication and stuff. And we see that definitely, that's more of a research study in the menopause community. So there's lots of reasons it can be helpful, aside from, I guess, the obvious, oh, we're just going to rehab. But equally, if there is also dryness there and things like that, they're not going to make everything feel just as it was before. You might want to massage any scar tissue. You might want to use a vaginal moisturizer to support that. So I guess that's where, yes, they can massively help, but they won't fix everything. And therefore, we might need to use other adjuncts, which is where the whole, that's more pelvic health conversation, aside from the pelvic floor, to actually make you feel more like you. And that's where the whole conversation is more than the muscles. It's actually wider, and we have to look at everything.
So interesting, isn't it? But I think it's useful for women to know there is something that they can do really early on, really simple at home, you know, led in bed, that will help with that recovery process. And sometimes just knowing that you are actively doing something to help is really useful. I think when really you feel like you can't do much else in those early weeks.
Totally.
And then this one, which is really interesting from a midwife point of view, I think. So it'd be good to get your take. Yeah. Will pelvic floor exercises reduce my risk of tearing during birth?
There is some research that suggests. And I guess the understanding of why that is, I don't think I'm fully 100% clear on the exact reasoning why. But I think it does come a lot down to that understanding of your pelvic floor. Like, are we optimizing function? Are we improving your flexibility? Are we improving, again, that awareness of what it is to let go? So the argument is, yes, it can help with, it definitely doesn't increase your risk, which I think is sometimes the fear of like, oh, my vagina is going to be so tight, it won't stretch. That is still pelvic floor dysfunction. And yes, it can shorten the second stage as well, which is kind of really good, which again, I'm like, what's going on there? That's amazing. So there's lots of reasons that there are positives that are outside of just reducing incontinence, which I guess should increase our incentivization. So saying that, I had a really long second stage in my first delivery and I did pelvic floor exercises. So, you know, that research study, not relevant to me. But yeah.
Yeah, and I think as well, when you think about reducing the risk, the length of the second stage, that's really, really important, because we know that prolonged second stage can cause more pelvic floor damage, because all that time your baby's essentially pounding the pelvic floor. Yeah, being stretched. B, it reduces your risk of instrumental birth. So things like forceps, which we know can cause more significant pelvic floor damage. Reduces your risk of cesarean section, episiotomies, which we know is a big old diagonal cut into your pelvic floor that causes imbalance and dysfunction.
No one knows that though, right? When I meet women who've had episiotomies, they're like, oh, I thought it was just like a bit of skin that they cut. I'm like, no, they're like, they're literally cutting through your pelvic floor muscles, which if we did that to any other muscle group in the freaking body, like, there is no other time. We're like, we're just going to cut your hamstring and then sew it back and off you go. What the frick? Like, how have we normalized this? It's so beyond me. And also not then educated the woman as to why maybe 6 weeks after cutting her pelvic floor, running isn't the best idea. Yeah. It's just bizarre to me. We would never cut a hamstring, gives it no rehab, which we never cut hamstrings unless we're doing like ACL repairs anyway, at which point that person is given the most intensive rehab program.
And there's a really good protocol.
Right.
Designed, yeah.
After episiotomy, it's like, yeah, we'll just stitch it up in the room, hope for the best, send you on your way, not tell you what's happened, and then send you back. It's just barbaric and archaic to me that we are still, that I have to sit down with a woman, probably at some point postpartum, to be like, do you want to know what's happened to your body? Like, do you want to just understand it? Now, I'm not saying we wouldn't want that. Like, ultimately, women are like, yes, please birth my baby safely. Like, I'm all for medical intervention as needed, 100%. Episiotomies save babies. They save lives. It's just that we're not then doing the aftercare of what that intervention is. And that, for me, is, I mean, what's the episiotomy rate? I don't know that off the top of my mind.
I don't know if there is a national one published.
No.
When I tried to look, I don't think there is one.
No, but I'm like,
but we know that, for example, instrumental birth is one in eight.
Eight?
And so they pretty much routinely have episiotomies. So it's at least one in eight.
And we know that 90-odd% have some form of perineal tearing. Now, that might be a first degree, which doesn't involve any pelvic floor muscles. But the majority of women I'm meeting are 2+.
Yeah.
Second degree onwards. It's like, that's a lot of pelvic floors that are going through some form of input, tearing, stitching, that are not being given the TLC that they really deserve. So, yes, there's a lot of work still to do in that basic education, because I genuinely think, like, it's that hard line, isn't it? I'm sure you find this where you're like, if I tell you, are you going to be terrified? Are we going to be scaremongering? You know, it's that really hard line, isn't it? And I'm sure you find this with an antenatal education. Empowered education with informed consent can be a scary place because you actually know all the options. And yet, if we don't do that, that's also a really scary place.
Yeah, and disempowering.
Really disempowering. So, yeah, I think I find personally, and I actually don't think there is, again, one answer. I think it depends on the individual and what they're comfortable with knowing. But I often do say, look, personally, I think you're going to rather know this so you can know what to do about it rather than us just ignoring it and hoping that it all doesn't happen.
And then understand why the support that you give from a pelvic floor perspective is so important, because this is what journey that's been for your body. And I think actually, one of the saddest things about what you just said is that we're not necessarily talking about women at 6 weeks. Sometimes this can be 2-3 years down the road that people are explaining the birth injury, which is just awful.
Bizarre, isn't it? And even like the statistics often that are sort of I guess, expressed around it taking 7 years for women to get support for this. And it's before I got to the stage of life I'm now in, I was like, I don't get that. 7 years is such a long time. Now, it will be 7 years for both of my children to end up in full-time education. Mm. At that point, I actually look ahead and think that's probably the first time I'm going to actually have the most brain space I'm going to have had in a long time. Now, I can tell you how many emails you get from the school. There ain't a lot of brain space because your emails are out of control. However, I will have two of them not at home for weeks on end, you know, not weeks on end, they won't actually move out, but
oh shame, the daytime
hours. Yeah, that's why I just drop them off, see what happens. Daytime hours, well, I'll actually get a bit more space. I could really go to an appointment more easily, whereas now, you know, if I need to go to an appointment, I've either got to give up my working time or get additional childcare to go to an appointment. Yeah. Now, if you're then thinking, well, I need a few appointments to do the rehab, I'm either trying to go after work, before work, it's really hard. And I just now fully get that.
Yeah.
That yes, do you know what? It takes 7 years because that's the first time we come up for kind of more regularity air.
And have probably had time to actually think about how you're doing.
How you're doing, 100%, you know? And I was talking about, we were just talking about earlier, like I've just been to the hairdresser. And even when they come, like, you should come more regularly. And you're like, do you know how much it has taken for me to get
today,
here today? Like the weeks of planning in advance to make sure that like my work schedule and then my husband's work schedule. And I still had to take the three-year-old to the hairdresser. My husband met me there, took him, did the school run, came home, prepped the dinner. Now I've come home to finish work. Seriously, like, I can't do that every 5 weeks because I've got to do that about and probably another appointment that I've also got to take or take my kids to an appointment. So there is just so much, I think, pressure on women. And yeah, it's okay to come 7 years later if that's when's right for you.
Yeah,
it's never too late. And what I was funnily thinking about the other day, because I then had two, I had literally this kind of lady who'd come 10 years postpartum was like, I hope I'm not too late. And someone came at 15 weeks pregnant being like, I hope I'm not too early. And I was like, neither of those things exist. Like, it's never too early and it's also never too late. It's just the right time for you and when work. And I think that's such an important message that we almost think there's this like perfect window to come and do pelvic floor rehab. Like, start as early as you want if you can and you've got awareness and you've got access to that. Also, don't ever think that like you get into your 60s and you also can't have help, because you absolutely can. And I think that's the message we've got to, because I think you feel like you've come out your perinatal period and you're like, well, then I'm done, pelvic floor exercise is done for me.
I'm left, there's no hope. I'm left with
there's no hope. And it's like, no, there's always hope.
You made me laugh there. I was at the dentist this morning with my two-year-old and the dentist is like, Ella, do you floss every day? I was like, no.
Oh, seriously?
And I can't promise that I'm going to.
No, literally. I know. I'm like, again, that's one that I always compare to pelvic floor exercises. I'm like, every time I go, they're like, oh, you need to do these like between the teeth cleaners and floss morning and evening. I'm like, I will commit to doing that 3 times a week because that is all I can commit to. And if that is all I can do and that's my optimal dental health, then
we're good with that.
That's
for now.
All I can do. Yeah. So that's what I say to women. I'm like, this is what a dentist would say, and this is what I'm going to do. This is what a physiotherapist is going to say, and this is what I want you to do. But yes, we need to be realistic that therefore your recovery might take a bit longer, or my gums may not be as quite spankly amazing as they could be. But that's also my reality, and I'm okay with that.
Yeah, definitely. Meeting yourself in the middle, isn't it?
Totally.
My last question, Claire, is what is the best exercise to do for my pelvic floor?
Yeah, so, well, I don't know if I think there is one. I mean, pelvic floor isolation activations are still gold standard, kind of, for we still know and think that's really important. Who knows, 10 years we may disagree, but for now this is where we're at. So essentially, to engage your pelvic floor, we often encourage people to think about holding around the back passage, so thinking about holding in wind and then bringing that forwards to the pubic bone. So thinking about squeezing forwards and then releasing. So very much what I often don't encourage is this kind of real squeeze upwards and inwards towards the head with a really forceful motion, because often that does get your tummy kicking in far more. Yeah. So anus to pubic bone and then release. So those are the isolatory ones. And what we often talk about is short ones and long ones. So short being that it's just you don't hold, you just activate the muscle and release the muscle, activate the muscle and release the muscle. And then we activate hold whilst we breathe for up to 10 seconds, but 10 seconds honestly feels like eternity if you've not tried that before. So just start with 3 to 5 seconds and then move on, and then release. And again, try and do 10 of those ideally. However, we also have other, you know, studies that evolve that, you know, look at just other exercises like a shoulder bridge, or, you know, things like Pilates. The pelvic floor activates through movement. So even there's now stuff suggesting that walking can be really good for pelvic floor dysfunction. So basically being active and isolating the pelvic floor would be your baseline, but also prevent constipation. That's not an exercise, but really important, and something that I think is so much more, well, I say simple. It's not simple, because for some of us it's really hard, but actually bowel health is so fundamental in our pelvic health. But again, I think that conversation is still super awkward to have. I think we're getting there though. Like when I was rereading my book on the audiobook, I was like, gosh, I talk about poo a lot. I was like, and now it's here. My kids just can't, they're just obsessed with the Bristol stool chart page. They're like, every time someone comes over, like, mummy wrote a book and it's got a chart about poo in it. I'm like, it's not just about that though, guys.
Yeah, like, but also
also the other 300 pages have really important information as well. But yes, there is a chart about poo, and if you'd like to see, I'm very welcome to talk to you about
it. I can't wait to take him in a bookshop, Claire.
Where's
mummy's poo book?
I'd be like, thanks guys. Don't you love young kids? But yeah, I mean, like, look, I'm delighted they even know there is a poo chart. And actually, we funny enough, my kids are very aware of their pelvic health generally, and they're like, we need to go for the perfect poo that's like a sausage and not the hard ones and not too soft. I'm like, yes, well done kids,
good job,
read the word, go home, go into school and tell them that information. Don't talk about your maths.
Yeah,
exactly. Real important information. Yeah.
And I just carrying on with that one just slightly, I think the other thing that's important is that the best exercise for you, the best exercise for me, is going to be different, because we're different, our anatomy is different, our pelvic floor is different.
Yeah,
in the same way,
exactly.
If you know, two people joined a personal trainer, the best exercise for one is not going to be the best exercise for the other. So
absolutely.
It's about treating you as an individual. If you've got a really overactive, tight pelvic floor, you doing loads of squeezes is not going to be great.
Not the one. You want to do some breathing first and some visualization work. And I think what I want to say on that topic, though, is I still hear women being like, well, I've been told I've got a tight pelvic floor, so I should never do pelvic floor activations. Now, the interesting thing is we do have some research that suggests that actually squeezing the pelvic floor maximally can actually aid relaxation. So it's about, again, that's personalized care at the end of the day. So I will, when I'm examining someone, we will try different things to work out what's best for that person, what's best for them to connect with. And that's right, it's got to be individual. Ultimately, I think we all benefit from diaphragmatic breathing and actually visualizing the pelvic floor letting go, because I'd say as a population we're not great at that. I'm seeing it more, and I can't tell if it's just because we're going through a very stressful time as a world, we've been through a very stressful time with the pandemic, I think, or I just feel like mothers are getting more stressed because we're getting 3,000 emails from school, and we're perfect parenting and we're, you know, feeding our kids organic kale and all these other things.
Are we?
Which,
oh, I must have missed that.
I'm not. but I feel like we should be, you know. So there's that element of just, there is so much for like pressure on us that I sometimes think, what I talk about a lot in the book is the mind-body connection, the pelvic floor's reactivity to everyday life.
Yeah.
That's why the problem is when we view a time in our life in isolation and forget what came before or goes after, is that it just is not true, and we don't optimize what we need to because we're missing part of the picture. Mm-hmm. So yes, breathe, important, and awareness. Like, it's amazing how even I talk about this all the time. I'll stand in clinic and realize I'm just literally holding my pelvic floor on, like squeezing it for all dear life, and then I'm like, just let it go, girl, like chill out. But I actively have to choose to do that. It's not something my body is necessarily naturally doing easily.
It's interesting. So I know when I'm having like a stressful day, I feel it in my pelvic floor, because like you, I'm holding it, and then all of a sudden I really 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 need to wee, because I can't hold that in. And it's so, I know, for me it's so linked to that stress, and suddenly you realize that your jaw's clenched and your shoulders are up by your ears, and
we're all the same. So it's like, there's a whole section on stress in the book, because I was like, it's such an important thing that we never associate. We're like, oh yeah, I get jaw tension, I get neck tension. I'm like, yeah, I'm pretty sure we examined your pelvic floor. Your pelvic floor is going to be somewhere up by your eyeballs as well.
Physically
can't actually, but yeah.
And that's where it's so much more than just your pelvic floor exercise. It's a whole lifestyle thing, isn't it?
And like, so ultimately, it's like, I was sharing on Instagram this week, you know, we don't brush our teeth when the fillings come.
Yeah.
You do it to prevent that. And therefore, why are we not starting education on pelvic health first? Like, aim for the good poos, have the fiber, have the fluid, you know. Celebrate that with your kids. Like, we don't have to complicate this. Like, my kids don't know in-depth information. But they know we're eating the vegetables because it helps their poo. We're drinking the water because it helps their tummy and their, well, many things, but also their gut. And that's why we want to eat lots of different things. So we keep it very basic, but we empower them in their food and their drinking for health reasons. And they'll go through life knowing that now. Now, I'm not saying it'll always be great. They'll be teenagers and they'll be grumpy and they won't want to eat broccoli. They don't really want to eat it now, but we get through it because we talk it through. And I think what I always say to women is, they're like, well, what can I do to help my kids? I'm like, understand your body better. And it will just naturally flow. In the same way we see those studies where mothers who exercise in front of their kids are more likely to engage in activity. The more you kind of model these conversations or just make it completely fine to talk about these things, the more that they will do it. And that's how we do it. It's not another thing to add to the perfect parenting list. It's just another way to, I guess, influence through just being together and having the conversations. And that's my main mission, is to not add to guilt or load. It's to just give top tips that you can implement every day that are not complicated, but we just don't know we should be doing it.
Yeah, oh, definitely, Claire. It makes so much sense. And actually, that's how we're going to change for the next generation.
This is it.
Feeling like it's normal to have these
symptoms. Totally. Which is, and we rely on, I think, organisations and institutions to bring the change. Mm-hmm. And I know we've talked about that from some of the work that you're doing in the NHS and kind of just NHS in general. There's amazing stuff going on, but we can't wait for the funding to come through and all the services to change for our generation and potentially these kids coming through. Now, it's amazing, like in the PHSE stuff that's in schools now around kind of like physical well-being and sexual education, pelvic floor exercise is now included in that. Now, that's really exciting, but it's going to take a while for that to percolate through the layers. So anything that we can do now, which will only just amplify that, the better. We can't wait for institutionalized change to be, for there to be the change. We have to be the change, and we can do it. We don't have to overcomplicate it. I truly believe that.
Oh, it's so powerful, Claire. Last thing then, if you could just share with us three key tips for pre or postnatal women about pelvic health, what would you just want people to take home from this if they take nothing else?
Prevent constipation. Get that bowel, fiber, fluid movement. It's really important. It puts a lot of pressure on the pelvic floor if you're straining, slash there's just a lot of poo sitting in there. Get to know your pelvic floor better. Know what it is to release it. Know what it is to squeeze it. Absolutely vital. And just keep active where you can. That doesn't mean five formal exercise programs a week. That means getting out for a bit more walk, a few more steps, you know, breathing, relaxation, a bit of yoga, going to the kid park with your kids, and while they're, you know, while they're doing something, have a little walk around. I used to do a few squats whilst, you know, on the seesaw with my daughter. There are so many ways we can build in general activity. The body loves movement, the pelvic floor loves movement. So those have been my three tips.
Oh, Claire, you're amazing. Thank you so much for the work you're doing. It's literally changing women's lives. If you've enjoyed listening to Claire talk today, then make sure you head to the episode description and get your hands on her Strong Foundations book. Thanks so much, Claire. Before you head off, I just need to tell you something. 68% of you who listen to my podcast have not hit the subscribe button. So can you do me a favor? If you have ever enjoyed listening, and hit subscribe now. It makes a huge difference and helps me to keep bringing you episodes. The bigger the podcast, the bigger the guests, and the more women we can reach and help. Thank you for subscribing, and I look forward to chatting again soon.
Hi, my name is Kay Adams, and to be honest, I'm not so good with the aging process, so I enlisted my old chum, the filter-free Cara McKenzie, to advise.
Could you imagine being a porn star? The room would need to be really hot for me to strip off.
To be honest, she's not much help, but she is rather amusing. And along with some great guests, Joe Brand, Andy Oliver, Anton Dubek, Ruth Langsford, and Craig Revel Horwood, darling, we are learning how to be 60. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.